Content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Fred Brack reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving our community since 1974, and underwriting our podcast for over 15 years. Thank you, Carter Glass. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And now we are going to return one more time to the September 2022 edition of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. The theme has been Carolina horses, but we've been reading about B&Bs, and we're going to continue to do that after we do what we always do in the last reading of the month, and that is read the article from the Decades series by Philip Gerard. He's up to the 1980s. A few more months of this, and I suppose we'll go on to the 90s, won't we? The title of this one is A Reunion for the Ages. A quest to discover her roots inspired a Terrell County native to organize a homecoming for the descendants of the men and women once enslaved at Somerset Place Plantation. And here are some of those relatives. They were certainly happy when they had this reunion. Oh, they are smiling and hugging each other. There's three different couples. They're not necessarily a man and a woman, but three couples that are hugging here. It's kind of an odd picture. The front of the picture is looks black and white, and the back looks sepia-toned. I don't know how they've or how or why they did the picture this particular way, but it says, in 1986, some 2,000 people gathered to honor their ancestors who were enslaved at Somerset Place, culminating nearly a decade of research by Dorothy Sproul Redford. Inspired by the work of a famous writer whom she has never met, a young black social worker from Columbia, North Carolina, sets out on a decade-long odyssey that will change her life, the life of her daughter, and the lives of thousands of strangers. Dorothy Sproul Redford is one of millions transfixed by Alex Haley's monumental saga Roots, a best-selling book and TV miniseries that chronicles the abduction and enslavement of Haley's ancestor, Kunta Kinte, from West Africa in 1767, as well as the six generations that followed. Redford, 33 years old and single, is living in Portsmouth, Virginia, when the series airs in 1977. Her 13-year-old daughter, Deborah, watches it with her. Redford's own family history has taken her from her home in Columbia to Portsmouth and then to Queens, New York, back to Virginia at age 11, to Queens again after high school, and finally again to Virginia, a series of moves that leaves her feeling unrooted, or unmoored, rather, from her past, facing many vexing questions. I was too busy with the here and now to think about the there and then, she later writes in Somerset Homecoming, a personal memoir steeped in meticulous primary research and written with a deep and lyrical passion. It wasn't just me facing the questions now, she writes. Deborah wanted answers, too. Who were my great-grandparents? Where did they come from? Were they slaves? And their parents, where did they come from? She concludes, my daughter was demanding her past, but I could not give it to her without discovering my own. She begins with questions to family, especially her mother, reminisces about people from her past with Over the River names. That is, an older generation of relatives from her own father's past in the countryside west of Columbia near Creswell and Lake Phelps. Redford knows him as Papa. His full name is James Ed Little John. Then one day my mother mentioned a name that meant more to me than any other. Alfred Little John, Papa's father. My great-grandfather on the Little John side. A tenant farmer about whom little has been recorded, who migrated from Creswell to Edenton, and who died in 1925. Redford's search for roots now takes her into vaults of census data and property deeds in Edenton and Norfolk, Virginia, birth, marriage, and death records in Washington County, and the parish register from St. David's Chapel, and financial transactions as she looks for family names that strike a chord of recognition. And there, in the 1870 census, the first to list now emancipated black people by name instead of enumerating them as property, she discovers the name she has been searching for the hardest, Alfred Littlejohn, born 1847, a slave. Through hundreds of hours of cross-referencing census data and other records, she traces the lineages of 21 families whose ancestors toiled among the more than 850 enslaved people on Somerset Plantation. Somerset began in 1784 as a joint venture between Josiah Collins, a native of Somersetshire, England, newly arrived with his son, Josiah Collins II, a local businessman named Nathaniel Allen, and Samuel Dickinson, a physician. Their initial plan was to drain Lake Phelps, then Lake Scuppernong, and put 100,000 acres of rich soil under cultivation. Collins dispatched the slaving brig Camden to West Africa, and it returned 18 months later with a cargo of 80 African men to be put to work hand-digging 6 miles of canal from the lake to the Scuppernong River. Arduous, often deadly work through malaria-infested swamps, the natural habitat of alligators, venomous snakes, and other predators. Imprisoned in a strange land, far away from family and home, and overcome with grief, many walked into Lake Phelps and drowned. Still, others dared to disappear in the vast swamp as runaways, usually hunted down by relentless slave catchers. Collins eventually bought out his partners. When he died in 1819, Josiah Collins III, a Harvard graduate and one of 7 grandchildren, inherited 5,000 acres, including Somerset Place, and 100 slaves. Under his management, Somerset became one of the most profitable slave plantations in the South, and Josiah Collins III, the third largest slaveholder in the state. In 1860, 328 enslaved workers, including household servants, skilled tradesmen, and field hands, kept the enterprise running under a strictly regimented system that confined them to the plantation grounds. Now, in the early 1980s, Redford researches the brutal day-to-day reality of her ancestors' lives and makes a heartbreaking discovery. They have been erased from the history of Somerset. Since 1969, Somerset has been officially a state historic site, drawing thousands of visitors every year. But tours and interpretation have focused almost exclusively on the restored Collins Mansion, furnished with period artifacts of the white slaveholder class. As historian Elisa Harrison notes, the state's goal of animating the distant past for the use of contemporary consumers required the wholesale obliteration, not only of the slave's presence, but of 100 years since the end of the Civil War. Redford receives a grant to study papers related to Somerset at the State Archives in Raleigh. One day, in January 1985, she approaches Larry Misenheimer, who is in charge of the state's historic sites. "We're going to have a homecoming of the descendants of Somerset Place," I said. "Can we use the site?" He agrees, adding that they can link the event to the 400th anniversary of the founding of the lost colony at Roanoke Island. But she is resolute. This was no state celebration, no public relations showpiece. This was our homecoming. And it must happen in 1986, the 200th anniversary of the landing of the first 80 enslaved Africans to work at Somerset. It will take place on the Saturday of Labor Day weekend. Redford sets out to find descendants and engage the help of allies in her project. She scours the countryside across Creswell and Columbia, knocking on doors, sitting on front porches and at kitchen tables, speaks at churches far and wide, mails out letters and flyers to every descendant she can track down and anyone who might be able to spread the word. She writes to state officials, hoping to enlist their cooperation. But at first, the response was disappointing. No one was getting it, she later writes. Redford also invites Alex Haley, but he has sent his regrets. He will be aboard a ship at sea working on a new book. And despite repeated letters to Governor James Martin's office inviting him to attend, she's received no reply. Then a story published in a Norfolk, Virginia newspaper triggers mail and phone calls from Florida to New England. In July, a staff writer for the Washington Post calls excitedly to tell Redford that her article, Descendants of 21 Slave Families Together, has made the front page. The story goes national. The state sends crews to repair and paint the big house and spruce up the grounds. Signage is placed along access roads. Volunteers and Somerset staff arrange for food and activities, along with dancers, artists, musicians, and actors. Those who come will see how their enslaved ancestors lived, including traditional celebrations like a slave wedding ceremony. A reenactor will bring Harriet Tubman back to life. It's going to happen, but will the weather cooperate? The day dawned like any other at Somerset, Redford wrote. A moist chill was in the air. That was good. The day would be cool. And then come the descendants, some 2,000 of them, some whose forebears were enslaved, a few others related to the Collins family from New York, Seattle, California, Maryland, Washington, D.C., numerous other places far and wide. Though some have worried that the event might be painful, an occasion for blame and recrimination. In fact, it becomes a ceremony of healing and resolution, reconnecting long-separated family members, endowing the lives of their enslaved ancestors with the dignity and recognition they have been denied for so long. Barbara Eason Gadsden, who spent her childhood near Somerset and now lives in New York, speaks for many of the descendants. Now I don't feel bitterness. I feel we are found. A helicopter arrives, bearing Governor Martin. He asks the crowd, did you hear it? Did you hear the sound in your head calling you home? But the real surprise guest of honor is someone else. As I stood watching the performance of the slave wedding ceremony, I felt a tap on my shoulder, Redford writes. I turned around, and there was Alex Haley. I screamed and grabbed that poor man, squeezing the life out of him. The Somerset homecoming tradition has held, and with five more public gatherings over the... I get a little teary there, and I can't read quite. Read the last paragraph very well. Just give me a moment here. This is a wonderful story. The Somerset homecoming tradition has taken hold with five more public gatherings over the last 15 years. After that, individual families of the descendants continue to hold private reunions on the grounds. The lives once erased from history have been restored. Thanks to the tenacity of our visionary woman, their stories have come home. Somerset Place Historic Site is on Lake Shore Road in Creswell, and they are listed under historicsites.nc.gov. Next month, activists rescue 11 blocks of historic downtown Asheville. And now I'm going to read about Beaufort, one of my favorite places. Eden by the Sea. I was very close last weekend. I was in Oriental and actually got on the water of the Neuse River in a boat, but we didn't go to Beaufort this time. We went to New Bern. Eden by the Sea. The stately Queen Anne on Queen Street in Beaufort is more than just a bed and breakfast. It's a garden paradise where visitors forge lasting friendships, sometimes with the innkeepers themselves. Written by Kim Grizzard, and there's some pictures here of beautiful gardens that they have there. Two words in red capital letters posted on the gate, garden gate, speak volumes about the southern hospitality that's been cultivated at this 150-year-old Victorian home. Browsers, welcome. The lilies, petunias, hydrangeas, and canoe plants that grow outside the Pecan Tree Inn are not just for guests to enjoy. Locals and tourists alike in this 300-year-old historic port town are invited, quite literally, to stop and smell the roses. Welcoming passerbys are Colorado transplants Stan and Christine Lamb, who had never set foot in Beaufort until 2015. That's when the first-time innkeepers became the third owners of the largest boutique B&B in North Carolina's fourth-oldest town. "We fell in love with Beaufort in one day," Stan says. "There's not another town like it anywhere." What's not to love? The former fishing village, which routinely lands on best small towns in America, lists for its quaint waterfront and neighborhood vibe. The lures visitors who come to explore everything from boating to biking to maritime history and wildlife conservation. Guests of the Pecan Tree Inn can explore the waterfront half a block away or visit popular restaurants. Beaufort Grocery Company is right outside the front door without ever having to get in a car. Or they can use the inn as the starting point for a tour of the Carteret County area. "We tell people, you probably need 3 days," Christine says. "Here you can kayak, visit the islands, the museums, the aquarium at Pine Knoll Shores. Besides Beaufort, you can go down east, go horseback riding on the beach. There's so much to do." The Lambs had no intention of moving east when they decided a year into their marriage to leave their corporate jobs and become the owners of the B&B. Christine, a former caterer and California real estate manager, and Stan, a Marine and a 30-year FedEx veteran, were hoping to find something near the water, somewhere between Seattle and San Francisco, far from the heat and humidity of North Carolina. But they warmed to the old North State when they saw this Queen Anne on Queen Street, with bracketed bay windows, a widow's walk, and an elaborate wraparound porch. The grand two-story is one of Beaufort's crown jewels, believed to be the first house in town to have electricity, indoor plumbing, and a telephone. The inn, which celebrates its 30th anniversary this year, remains ahead of its time with eco-friendly features like electric car chargers and reusable glass water bottles, along with luxury amenities such as ambient sound generators and aromatherapy diffusers. But the Lambs have also preserved some of the house's old-world charm. From the property's elegant exterior, its windows and door frames, to its fireplaces and mantels, and some of the original wood flooring. When the place was built in 1866 as Franklin Masonic Lodge, the Masons celebrated the laying of the building's cornerstone with a parade. One of Beaufort's larger structures, the inn, has also served as a school, a tea house, and a doctor's office. Merchant Hugh Jones purchased the property around 1900, adding three Victorian porches that still showcase the architect's signature duck head and fishtail design in the trim. Jones and his wife added five bedrooms for their seven children. Today, those bedrooms serve as guest quarters with names like Cottage, Cape Lookout, Harbor, and Queen Anne, the largest room, which features an upstairs porch overlooking the koi pond. It's not unusual for guests to return year after year to simply ask for their room, and the Lambs will make every effort to accommodate. "We try to make everyone feel comfortable," Christine says. "We try to make people feel like they're a guest in our home because this is our home. Each room is equipped with internet, a smart TV, and a private bathroom, a relief to guests who fear they'll have to share a restroom down the hall." Although waiting in line for the shower is not one of them, there are plenty of opportunities for mingling. Guests gather in a cozy sitting area near the entryway or in an adjoining dining room, and they pass time on the sunny front porch or the shaded garden patio. Casual conversations in these spots have reunited childhood friends and brought fans and TV personalities face to face. The Inn has counted among its guests stars of Wicked Tuna and Miami Talent, Portland's version of America's Got Talent, who pose for photos with admirers. That doesn't normally happen when you're staying in a hotel, Christine says. You don't really get to get that close. Those are the cute little memories that we get. That's what we tell people. Come to Beaufort and make new memories. Beaufort is among the most beloved towns in North Carolina's Crystal Coast area, which means that the Pecan Tree Inn has drawn visitors from as far away as Austria and Ontario. They come in for events, including the Beaufort Pirate Invasion in September, the Crystal Coast Christmas Flotilla in December, and the Beaufort Wine and Food Annual Spring Festival in April. Penny Parker and her husband came to Beaufort in search of a small-town reprieve from their home outside of Washington, D.C. Although the 100-year-old pecan tree for which the inn was named came down a year after the Parkers' first visit, pecans remain a prominent place in Christine's goodies. Dishes like the pecan streusel, baked French toast, and homemade maple butter pecan cookies. The food, especially the cheesy potatoes, is what initially drew the Parkers to the inn during their earliest trips to the village to oversee construction of their home. But a growing friendship with the innkeepers is what kept them coming back. They introduced us to people, Parker says, and it wasn't just us. They do it for all the guests. I think it's the Beaufort way. Now, full-time residents, the Parkers no longer have occasion to stay at the Pecan Tree Inn, but they, like other locals, are always welcome to stop by for a visit or just to browse. It's the charm, I think, that brings you here and kind of keeps you here, Parker says. We were guests at first, and we became friends, and now they're family. Pecan Tree Inn, 116 Queen Street in Beaufort, pecantree.com. And if you're in the area, here are some things you can do. Each of the attractions scattered about Beaufort's historic waterfront area, from restaurants to shops to a maritime museum, where visitors can learn about everything related to the North Carolina coast, is within a 10-minute walk from the Pecan Tree Inn. You can eat at Beaufort Grocery Company, as I have done. Opened in 1991, the former Owens Grocery Store building, the cozy bistro is known for robust salads and deli-style sandwiches at lunchtime, steaks and local seafood for dinner, and brunch dishes and cocktails on Sunday. Have a Bogro, Bloody Martini, or Sangria while enjoying the sunshine on the garden patio. They're in Queen Street, BeaufortGrocery.com. Turner Street Market and Cafe. Turner Street is Beaufort's go-to spot for traditional breakfast dishes, classic sandwiches, prepared foods, wine gifts, and coffee. The cafe's nod to the community is the Bluefort turkey, roasted red peppers, Havarti cheese, tomato, lettuce, and house-made blue cheese salad dressing, served on toasted wheat bread. They're on Turner Street, turnerstreetmarket.com. And if you want to shop, try Cecil and Finch. Behind the bright blue door leading into this light blue building, Ruth Cecil curates a collection of sophisticated jewelry, home goods, art, and women's clothing and accessories. Many items in Cecil's shop come from North Carolina makers. They are also on Cecil Street. Turner Street. And the website is cecilandfinch.com. And we have some more places on the next page. Old Beaufort Farmers Market. Now in its 10th season, this farmers market runs from April through November, opening each Saturday with a ringing of a cowbell. Stroll among the oaks on the courthouse grounds while listening to live music and browsing about 50 vendors for local produce and meats, seafood, baked foods, our baked goods, fine art, and crafts. They're in Courthouse Square, and their website is old, with an E at the end, BeaufortFarmersMarket.org. you want to play. North Carolina Maritime Museum. The Maritime Museum at Beaufort explores the history and culture of North Carolina's coast, including lighthouse lore, boating, seafood, and artifacts from Blackbeard's wrecked Queen Anne's Revenge. It also includes the Harvey W. Smith Watercraft Center, a working boat-building facility. They are right on the water on Front Street. Their web address is ncmaritimemuseumbeaufort.com. There's a picture here of someone working on a boat, and there's always somebody working on the boat. They open the doors to the street all the time, so anybody walking by can see what's going on inside. This is a pretty good-sized boat. It says, from the second-floor balcony of the Harvey W. Smith Watercraft Center, visitors can watch traditional wooden boats take shape. This is a second floor. I didn't realize that. I've only looked in on the first floor. And then we have the Beaufort Ghost Walk. A fun way to get to know Beaufort. This walking tour explores 300 years of history in an hour and a half, through visits to the old burying ground and haunted houses, plus tales of the notorious pirate Blackbeard and ghosts of the Civil War, participants discover one of our state's oldest towns. They're on Middle Lane, BeaufortGhostWalk.com. It's a picture here of the old burying ground. I'm sure that people get to walk through that. And we don't really have time for another article. We only have a minute and a half left, so I will just browse through the magazine here at some of the advertisements. They have interesting things here. It says, picture your kitchen here. Your world of imagination comes to reality at AGM Imports Granite and Marble. They're in Charlotte, agmimports.com. And we flip a couple of pages over, and we see location, location, location. Contact us today to find out how a simple change of address can be the best decision of your life. New independent living residence opportunities coming soon at Cypress Glen, Greenville's choice for senior living. You're on Hickory Street in Greenville, Cypress Glen with one N, .org. Come home to Capital. Capital Investment Companies would like to help you make money. www.cico.us. And Investors Trust probably feels the same way. They have a Chapel Hill office and a Charlotte office. INVTrust.com, I think, is their address. And wonderful, Blowing Rock Elevate. You're getting away. Here's people having a little picnic with wine and cheese, sitting on a blanket among tall grass in Blowing Rock, and the address is blowingrock.com. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it, and you enjoyed it enough to come back next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving our community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Comments, questions, call us, studios, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.